Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and each week I try to bring you exciting new guests to talk about various aspects of UFOs and the paranormal. And UFOs are hot right now. There's a lot of interest, so tonight we're going to be talking about UFOs and UFO abductions, and in particular, the experiences of our guest, whose name is Paul Shishis. And he has been having experiences his entire life, which are quite extensive and involve pretty much the full range, as I understand it, but we will find out. He's had a lot of sightings, an abduction experience, at least one, and has quite a story to tell. So I know a lot of you people out there have had this type of experience. Researchers think that perhaps as many as 1 in 40 or 1 in 50 people have had an onboard UFO experience. So this subject is finally getting the attention it deserves, and I'm really excited to talk to someone tonight who's actually experienced it. And remember, this is a call-in show, so if you'd like to call in and ask a question of our guest, we'd love to take your call. Even if you just want to share an experience, I'll give you the toll-free number. It's 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494. I'll repeat that again later in the show, but let's just get right ahead to the show and talking with our guest, Paul Shishis. Paul, thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Hi, Preston. Thank you very much. Glad to be with you. I'm intrigued and out of the closet now to share the subject of UFO, which stands for You Find Out. And based on my experience and childhood nightmares and memories, I have a very keen memory. I think maybe that's one of the gifts that some of us possess, is to have a memory to put synchronicities together, coincidences. We analyze our surroundings more so than probably the people who have not been taken and or experienced any close encounters.
Right.
Each of the close encounters gives one a new definition of their surroundings. It does something to them. It creates a deep spirituality and a deeper understanding of their surroundings.
Oh,
and that's where I stand now, or where I'm at, based on the gambit of craft I've seen as small as a basketball to as big as miles in diameter, to transparent objects, like a jellyfish in the day, to like solid objects, and that of pure light, and I say just light, not an object, just pure light.
Right.
It's very, very much different of other things that you see. And that's just the thing that I'm finding myself, apart from other people, is the gambit of things I've noticed. Boy, I can start a real big catalog. I can give the stats on the sightings where I'm measuring myself as a random sampler of many sightings, of course. I can't believe I've gone over 130 sightings, which only in 2002, by the way, I had 9 sightings. And you can see the stats of where it's grown. And I think by that it's due to finding out that in 2003, I found out I was taken as a child. I had confirmation of that. On August 13th, 2003, and there was paranormal activity in 2003 in the house and a very prevalent sighting on March 3rd, 2003.
Sounds like quite a story. Well, why don't you start at the beginning? I mean, how did this all start in your childhood, correct?
Sure. I'll go right back to the good old days of the 1960s, 1967.
Right.
I returned from camp. I was in Cubs in the scouting unit, and I remember it was a Sunday, it was hot, and I returned home, and my neighbor next door that afternoon, I believe it was probably mid-afternoon, so it would be about 2, 3 o'clock, and it was hot, so it would be August, and he said he heard on the radio that a satellite's going to go overhead, and, you know, I'm a kid, and I'm, you know, out front, there's all your friends are gone at that time after you arrive into town, and then about 5-10 minutes later, he comes standing outside, screaming, pointing up, there it is. And I looked up. I saw a torpedo-shaped silver object moving across the sky two or maybe one silver spherical object circling around it, and I'm looking at it, clear sky, blue, and I'm watching it probably for a minute going across the sky, and I thought, well, satellite. You know,
doesn't sound like a satellite.
Well, it looked like it was about 30, 40,000 feet up, so, you know, at that altitude, I don't know how it stood up there. You know, like, I don't think that would be a satellite. And so as I go into my childhood, I'm very keen on nature, and, you know, I'm just exploring the ponds and the wildlife and collecting bugs and, you know, just very intrigued with our biology of many things. And growing with that, in 1977, I had a very prevalent sighting where I worked at Dominion Stores Limited at Nielsen and Ellesmere in Scarborough. It's northeastern Scarborough. And this happened on August 4th, 1977. And it was 8:45 at dusk. And I was working car pickup, serving the cars and giving them the groceries. I was serving the first car, and there was a guy parked in the car along the adjacent to the field there. And he says, "Do you know what that thing is up there?" And I looked. I said, "It's a plane." And I finished the car, and the next car pulled up. And then again, he said, "Well, look, it's not moving." And I look, and I just glance. I said, "Well, it's a helicopter. It's not moving." And I continued to serve the second. Well, it just looked like I didn't really pay attention at that moment, you know. And then I finished the car, the second car, and then he again says, "Look at the lights on it." Now I had full attention, and I was looking a mile east of me, over approximately over Morningside. This is into West Hills Township near Scarborough, and I could see a circle of lights. And I said, "Hey, yeah." And I'm looking at it, and I just, in curiosity, put my head down and hoofed it out to the field, about 200 yards, and stopped and looked to the east for it. It wasn't there. And I'm just looking up along the sky, along the east, and then above my head to look to the west, and there it was, without a word of lie, 50 feet away, 200 feet, maybe 300 max above me. And you still there?
Yeah.
Just heard some clicks. Anyway, the object, as I say, was very close. I could have hit it with a rock. In detail what it is, I sent you the drawing. It's silver gray, capsule shaped type, very sleek, like you'd see the Apollos, but very much sleeker. Looked like a whole mold of a part of a craft. It was just floating there. It wasn't making any sound. At the larger back end of it, it had a wheel of colors, and were rotating clockwise: blue, green, yellow, red. And in the center part of the four lights was an orangey-yellow light that stayed on. It was a bit larger. And I'm just, like, checking this thing out, like, I'm confounded. And I started thinking, they're time travelers. You know, what else can it be? Because this thing had some size to it, eh? It could be, 30, 40 feet in length. And it's like I started screaming down to it after 5 minutes, "Land, come down." And, it's just sitting there. The guy in the car who pointed out to me, you know, I don't know where he is, but I'm alone, and I'm now under probably for about 10, 15 minutes, maybe even 20 minutes under this thing, and I figure I got to get some witnesses. So I ran back across the field, and when I hit the edge, two things I noticed was, the first thing, I could hear a beeping sound, and I turned, and the second thing was, now the object was moving. It was moving very slow, and it was pulsating this beeping sound. A four-pitch beeping sound. And the guy in the car, I noticed, was gone, okay? And I ran into the store, in the grocery store, to get my buddy Ian to check this thing out. Now, you got to remember, I'm 18 years old here, and I ran to the back, and I'm describing him, and he's unloading a 45-footer in grocery. He says, "Come on, Paul, it's probably a blimp." And he says, "I ain't got time to come out." And I just ran back through the store, and I'm back outside, and I yell for Chuck to come running over to look at this. I just screamed, "Come over here, Chuck," and he come over, "What's going on?" And I pointed out the thing's like a little further away now to the northwest of us, our position.
Right.
Because of its altitude at, 200-300 feet, it's like passing the houses, it's like we're losing sight of it. And you could hear the beeping sound too. And like, so we're checking the sky after we didn't see it for 5 minutes, maybe 10. We go back to work, and about another 5 minutes later, we hear like a kind of sound. And he yells across the parking lot, "Do you hear that?" And I said, "Yeah, do you hear that?" So again, we're together, and we're looking in the sky, and we could see like a strip kind of cloud, you know, from east to west, north of us. And we're looking to the east, and at our vantage view, we could see a couple of townships over as Pickering, and I would say between Pickering, maybe even Oshawa, where I live now, I don't know, but it was very bright, and it was pulsating white and red, white and red, white, red. And this went on for a minute or two, and then it just went out and instantaneously just came on 2 to 5 miles south, okay, just at a distance, did the same thing again for another minute and a half, and like near the lakeshore, and it was gone, and that was it. And it's like, my God, what was it I just saw? I tell my parents, they can't believe what I saw. I tell my friends, I get ridiculed. I as 18, think logically, scientifically. I'm not a stupid kid. I go to the Toronto Library, and I go into microfiche, into the Toronto Star or city newspaper to find out about what is it I saw, because I'm not hearing anything on the news, the papers, nothing. And it was such an experience for me. It's like, what was it I saw? And
well, what did you
I got
think
into
it was,
the
then?
Article, and I'm sorry?
What were you thinking UFO at this time?
No, I was thinking, I was thinking time travelers. You know, right. I UFOs, like, as a kid, or like, you hear stuff, but, you know, you don't expect it to happen to you. Well, you're in the library, and you read the note, or in the article saying, and this is what, you know, gave me the satisfying answer, and I quote, "The Canadian government will not disclose any information regarding UFOs," and this new word I just learned in our culture, "extraterrestrials to the year 2000. So I said, okay, I've experienced something here that's not from our world. I believe that can happen. As a child, I always believed there were other planets with other star systems. You know, they just decided to figure this one out about, I believe, 11 years ago or so. But anyway, you put it to rest, and I went on into college and took forestry in Sault Ste. Marie, and I learned, I guess, about nature, the trees, the water, the air, everything, and came back, and I worked with the Ministry of Environment sampling, testing water in the Great Lakes, throughout the Great Lakes, too, by the way, for summer. So I was through all the waterways, you know, concerned, and you know, finding out our quality of water, and you know, which is kind of tear to the eye in some spots due to industry.
Right.
But UFOs were the furthest apart from my mind now, as a young man, and leading a normal, healthy life, and then finding marriage later on in 1989, and between. Stuff starting happening again is that something paranormal happened in the apartment with my then girlfriend, who is today my wife, something coming in the apartment, hearing the door actually open, and somebody walking down the hall and standing in front.
Huh.
But there was nobody there. There was nothing there. It was paranormal. It was associated with something here. And following that, I'm on the balcony in a hot summer August, and I'm having a cigarette on the seventh floor, the seventh balcony, where the penthouse at that time, and about 40 feet away from me, I hear a pop, and I see, like, little orange ambers. Like, nothing came along. It's just, like, a pop in front of me, and these little orange ambers, and I thought, what the heck's that?
Like lights, you mean?
Well, you know, like, you see fireworks, you see, like, an orange amber of, like, you know, it's that kind of tinge,
right?
Of like a you can maybe even classify it like a fire, you know, orange,
okay.
Amber when it goes up in the air. That was in front of me 30, 40 feet after I heard the pop. Like something was there, but I couldn't see anything. And I thought, what the heck was that? It goes further that around 1990, might have been 91, again August, it was on a Friday at 11 o'clock, I'm going down the main artery for downtown Toronto on the Don Valley, and I could see an object over the CN Tower, same type of object that I witnessed in 1977, doing that rotation of those lights, and actual motorists pull off the side of the shoulder looking in the direction and pointing as I'm going down that way. And I thought in my mind, well, there's another UFO. It'll come out in 2000. Not to worry. You know, and I went on because I was going to a pub, right? You're young. And it's like in 1995 at Georgian Bay. Again, it was late August, this one. I was on the beach. My youngest boy at age two was in the cottage sleeping that we were renting. And I was out on the beach alone, and I saw some lights come in over the bay, come on, and more come on, some go off, some more come on, some more come off. And what was happening is I could see a growth of more and more lights growing in the shape until finally all the lights were on the shape of a very large bell, okay, over the bay. It was incredible, and they stayed there for about 5 minutes. In fact, it looked like it was heading towards me, and I was pretty freaked out about it. And then the lights started to go off one at a time, two at a time, three at a time, because there were so many of them. And they went off, and they were gone. And I went next door the following day, you know, because those people go to their cottage every weekend, and I asked them, you know, is it possible that there's, you know, any tour boats or large ships that go out? You know, the bay. I'm trying to explain what it is I just saw. And they said, no, they used to, but they don't do that anymore. So there was some kind of activity of something out there, and I thought, well, you know, whatever it is, you let it go. You're family man now, and you're enjoying.
Well, was it pretty low down? Was it floating on the water?
It was probably, I'm going to say, miles out there. Miles. I mean, we could be talking 5.
Okay.
We could be talking 10. But there was a lot of lights out there. And together, when it formed a shape, it looked pretty big.
And it was low down.
Very big. This is in Georgian Bay.
It was on the horizon itself. You know what
yes.
I mean?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That's the way it would be. And it was right after 9 o'clock. It was dark because this was late August. And you know, I just shook my head and moved on. And
so
another
like
prevalent
five,
sighting.
Six sightings so far you've had?
That would probably be about the fourth.
The fourth.
Okay.
Right.
But that would be the fifth. Another prevalent sighting I had was 1999, and it was something never to forget. And this was at camp. I was out at the sandbanks. This is down the south of Trenton, Ontario, and there's a military base there. But in this area of Lake Ontario. I've seen a lot of things, but what I saw in 99 was the first of a wave of stuff I'd seen down there every time I went down there. It was 2:30 in the morning, and I was just admiring the sky watching. I'm not, you know, big on UFOs. I know they're happening, but I wasn't, you know, waiting for, you know, to see anything. And I witnessed a very large neon green round object. It's kind of like, you know, when you see the moon at its biggest size, I saw that go over my head. Okay, and it moved so fast, it looked like a water bug at the front.
Wow.
You know when a water bug makes waves at the front?
I do. It has kind of like a wake.
And
I know what you mean.
Preston, it was huge. Absolutely huge. And I probably saw it for probably no more than 2 seconds.
Huh.
I can't even tell you how fast it was going, okay? It was probably, you know, just over a blink of an eye.
Wow. So what are you thinking?
You know,
you're seeing all this stuff. And it's beginning to stack up at this point.
Well, they certainly are, and the sighting that really started to bring my interest to all this was the August 3rd, 2002.
August 3rd, again.
They're all August. They're all night timers, except for 1967. You know about 1967? There was the Shag Harbor crash.
Oh, right, in Nova Scotia, right?
Right. That was in 1967. The date was October 4th. In coincidence, that's my parents' anniversary.
Huh.
Okay. And I'm gonna. I tell you, there are a lot of coincidences I can throw at you, but I'm just gonna throw some at you, and because I'm not gonna give you the whole spiel of coincidence and synchronicities of what I'm seeing, but I just want to give you up to par of where all this came to be, the path that I've gone beyond here. And in 2002, August 3rd, was just that. I fell asleep in the chair at camp. and I woke up, and the fire was, like, pretty near dead, and all you could hear were the frogs and the crickets. And camp is very quiet even after 11. And, you know, I was curious to see if I would see anything more in the sky because of what I'd witnessed in the past. I had nothing else to do, you know, when it's camp and you sky watch in the night. You know, it's cleaner air or less light pollution. You see more of the constellations. And anyway, I got up, and I'm going to bed, and I just close in the car door, and I look up. I see a light, and I right away, I think, jet. And I go around the car, and I look again up to the light, and there's another light following it. So now there's two of them. The other light is close. I'm gathering hundreds of yards, if maybe a quarter of a mile away. It was quite high up there. And I right away grab my flashlight, flash the last object as they're moving, very slow, too, by the way. They were just like not bright lights and not really low lights, but it was like you would see a jet going across the sky. Okay. And I flashed both of them. I did a circle four or five times between them. And I'm watching them for about 30 seconds. As they're going, I guess they were heading towards the south. As they got over Lake Ontario, and here's, I'll tell you, these things can really do something to your psyche of what you witness that defy logic. They didn't turn, they redirected to the west as one, like one object. Okay?
Oh,
and my jaw dropped and my heart dropped, and I almost felt like screaming at camp at 2:30 in the morning to wake people up. Because I'm watching now the lights going across for another 20 seconds until they're gone because of the trees. And it's like, what was that? And I'm like wide-eyed now. I'm not going to sleep. And I'm up till 3:30. And I then go to bed, and I'm up the next night till that time, nothing. I go home, and the following Saturday, which is on August 10th, I grabbed the star paper, and I noticed crop circles were found in Howick, Quebec, on August 3rd, 2002, the same date. The crop circle involved is called a quadruple. The light formation that I witnessed on the craft in 77 has the same pattern, okay? Very coincidental? I don't know. But what happened next was because of what I was seeing, I was sort of amplified and going back into what had actually happened. There was a strange sound at camp coming from the river. Even someone across the river would be shining a light to figure what that was. It was kind of a screeching kind of sound. I don't know what it was. I've never heard it before. And, you know, I've heard a lot of different sounds, but it was weird. And to reflect back, as strange as it may sound, my son at that time, age 9, said he saw a koala bear around that area.
Huh.
Okay. Now, it makes you wonder. But what happened on the 10th, when I found out about the crop circles, we went to the theater, and a couple of towns over to the east of us called Port Hope, and we went to the Port Hope Drive-In. And what movie were we going to see? Well, guess what? Signs, right? We were watching the first movie near the end, and something very magic happened above us that was witnessed by the whole drive-in. We had the northern lights coming in, but these weren't the average colors I've seen of the blue and the green and the yellow of that of the northern lights. This was with the most richest lilac color, and between a pink and a lilac, I've ever seen in my life. I watched it for 5 minutes before the rest of the people in the drive-in reacted. I watched it, and it was almost like it had a consciousness, the way it moved, the way the waves were, because I have seen the northern lights before as a kid. And through my growing years, you know, I'm saying probably about 3-4 times, maybe more, just can't remember that well. But these were very different. And I thought to myself, as this lasted after a half hour and then it went into a rich blue and then it was gone, I thought, my God, you know, what a coincidence here. What's going on here? So I felt it the need to explore what the heck is going on. Okay? So I look for a local investigator. And I find Victor. And I talk to Victor. And I tell Victor of my 9 sightings. And then he asked me about childhood nightmares. And I go, well, like ongoing childhood nightmares. I said, well, just the mummy dream. He says, well, tell me about that. So I told him, well, I remember these tall kind of creatures with big eyes, like wrap around kind of like an insect. And they would be carrying me. I remember specifically two of them carrying one. They're both walking side by side. The one on the left side walking down the hall holding me, I looked into the face. And the eyes looked at, when I looked at the face and I looked at the eyes, it was like a stare that froze me. That is the best way I can say with that. It froze me. I could move my eyes, but I couldn't scream. I couldn't move. Now, you got to remember, I'm at the time this is a dream. And the thing about this, too, is that the way they walked, as I could see down, they walked, and their legs looked spindly. They walked like their legs were robotic. Okay? And I'm got my head hanging down, looking into my parents' bedroom door as we walk past. You can hear them snoring. Okay, my father or my mother, you can hear them sleeping. But looking into the room, it was like I was in a kind of different dream state of reality.
Okay?
And the next thing I know, I'm in a room. It's like a very light-toned, mush-white room. No lights you can see. It's just there is lighting, but it's surrounded around you.
Right, right.
There's no furniture that I can see. It's a cornerless room, and there are these little guys that look littler than the guys that took me from the house that look like snowmen. Like their faces. I mean, they didn't look like big body snowmen, but their faces look snowmen. And
what do you mean by that? I mean, they had round eyes?
Yes. The eyes were a bit different of what I was feeling. And they, now, I'm talking back 1963 when I'm age four.
Okay.
All right. This is when this was happening in memory. And they were in a circle. There were about five of them, maybe seven, maybe nine, you know, but they were in a circle. There were a few. And they were throwing me around to each other like it was a game, like I was a ball. And then I felt a sense of humor in the crowd that Paul's the ball. And I remember being thrown in the air, kicking my legs, going to the next one, and I'd be scared to look in the face, but I would see the cranial or the head sort of move kind of like robotically, checking me out from head to toe. And a prevalent memory that is to this day that I remember, I can't really say if it was that after all a sequence of what I'm telling you, this could be sporadic dreams, but I'm not saying it all happened the same night, but this is what I do remember, is that I was in a darkened room. I don't know if it was my room. I don't know if it was, you know, a dream at the time. But it was all dark, and I could see a white light, very bright white light, like a pendulum at a distance moving. And it was coming closer and closer, and I believe I can even make the sound going like that. And it just got closer until it got so big it felt like it encompassed me, my entire body, with a crushing sensation to the chest. And I woke up screaming to the top of my lungs. And my parents came into the room. And I remember specifically my father saying, should we take him to the hospital? And my mother said, no, he's got a high temperature, fever. I'll get a face cloth and I'll cool him down. And for the rest of the night, I didn't sleep. And, you know, as a child, I remember resisting to go into a department store because I was afraid of the mannequins.
Right.
And
it's interesting. I've heard a lot of these details before, so it's from other people, so it's very interesting what you're saying. Well, everyone, you're listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight is Paul Sheesh. And we're talking about his many and profound UFO experiences. And if you have a question for our guests or if you'd like to share an experience, we'd love to hear from you. Here's the toll-free number. It's 888-228-4494. I'll repeat that one more time. So grab your pen. It's 888-228-4494. We'd love to hear from you. Sorry about that, Paul. Didn't mean to interrupt you.
That's okay. No problem. So that's the dreams I had telling Victor. And Victor then saying to me, you're a very interesting case. That close encounter must have been something. And he said, I do believe in abducted. And I go, abducted? I go, I don't think so. They were just dreams. Okay? I couldn't go with what he was saying. I've seen some strange stuff, but I wanted to know what's going on. Because, you know, I'm all wet to this stuff.
You haven't read any books at this point about UFOs?
Well, no. What furthered my advancement into this was, you know, the Internet. I started researching abduction, alien agenda, and I started finding things about me that seemed pretty kind of quirky. It was a MUFON journal, and it talked about the emotions of abductees, and the highest rate would, I believe, and I'm going on memory here, 80% were angry about abduction. No, I'm sorry, 80% were in fear, followed by 60% realizing they're angry at what had happened. And the emotions go all the way down to, you know, fascinated or interested, happy, at 1.3, and I looked at myself and I said, boy, that sort of sounds like me, but I, you know, I'm just going on with the study of this, and I find something else too intriguing, that alien agenda, various agendas that are tended of thought of, or people are trying to put together possibilities, and I found one very intriguing, acting liaison between extraterrestrial and human. It was the feeling I was getting of sort of this. But it moves on as I'm studying into this and now, you know, watching the sky a little more visionally, I'm starting to wonder and question. And in Oshawa here, and anybody who wants to research this, it's true, Oshawa was experiencing in January to April many outages, power outages, mostly for a second or two. So you'd wake up with a flashing clock. But there were times where 10 minutes off, 15 minutes off, 20 minutes off. This was happening across the board almost every day in the Durham region, too. On March 3rd, 2003, I went outside to have a smoke right after 12 o'clock, and I looked up, and on a clear blue sky day at that time, I saw a white cross-shaped object. You could say you could pass it as the shape of an angel across, you know, that's the best way to describe it. Color? The most brilliant white your eyes could lay your eyes on. Not a light that you were witnessing, but a color. It was probably about 3,000 feet above my roof, maybe a little more, maybe a little less. I can't tell you. But I, as I stepped out further away to look at it, I see another one. There are two of them. They're just sitting there, sort of, you could say, almost stationary but wavering a bit. And, you know, definitely not seagulls, okay? I'm watching them for probably 20 minutes until finally one broke away from the group, and I ignored it. It went to the southeast of me, and I'm still watching the other one. And then 5 minutes later, the other one starts to move, and I got my eye on this one, and it starts moving to the southeast like the first one, same flight path. Right. And now the background I was witnessing these things, it was not a cloud in the sky, it was all blue, but now that where it had shifted and moved, I could clearly see the clouds there, that under the clouds it was a light. Okay, it looked like a light moving very slow underneath the clouds. And I thought, my God, you know, what's going on here? That's really weird. And it goes further into weird, into a paranormal thing now in the home. I'll just sort of go forward here that I believe it was March 18th. I've got all this documented. It will come out eventually as a book. But approximately on March 18th, I woke up to go to work, and I woke up without the alarm. And I looked at the clock. The clock was out. The phone was out. There was more sunlight coming in the room, so I knew I'm running late here. And I got up. I thought, damn, another power outage. And I went downstairs, and and I turned on the kitchen light, and I go, oh, power's on. I go, okay, and I look at the clock on the wall, and I go, okay, I'm an hour late. I ran back upstairs, and I looked at the clock, and I go, what the heck, it's still out. And I put the bedroom light on, and it came on. I thought, what the heck? And I dropped it on my knees, and my plug was pulled from underneath my bed that connects to the clock and phone. So anyway, I got ready. I got to get out of here, and I got on the highway, and the next intersection, main intersection, leaving home, because I have to go a 45-kilometer ride every day to go from Oshawa to Scarborough, and there was a bad accident on the road. But, you know, I got to work, and around 11 o'clock, 11:30, my wife calls and says, Paul, we've got a problem with the phones. And I go, what do you mean we've got a problem with the phones? She said, every time they just start ringing, and when they ring different tones. And I go, well, you know, that's weird. I said, at least you can make the call out. But she says, when I pick up the phone, it's the operator, please hang up and try your call again. Please hang up and try your call again. This is a recording. Or she would get a party line of two people talking. And I said, well, I'll check it out when I come home. So I started thinking in my mind, what the heck's going on with this? And I go home. First thing I do is I get on my hands and knees. I go under the bed to check out the plug. I go, you know, what pulled the plug from underneath the bed? You know, I went to bed. I set my clock as I always do. It was on. Everything's fine. Nobody goes under the bed. We do have a cat. I even thought, well, maybe the cat was pawing at it. No, when you put the plug in, it's tight. I even looked at the plug, checked for maybe any teeth marks that the cat may have grabbed it. No, nothing. So I sort of baffled by that, and then I come down, and the phone started ringing, and yes, as my wife had said, all the tones of the phones were different. I called Bell Canada. They tried to tell me, well, you know, you'll have to pay for the internal problem. I said, the problem's not in the inside, it's the outside. That went by. I got an apology letter about a year later from Bell Canada, late on that. But anyway, what happened next after that, I'm thinking, you know, something paranormal may have happened here based on the phone thing, based on even the plug being pulled out, the outages regularly happening. I'm feeling kind of electrified here, maybe even terrified on a borderline of fascination. You know, what's going on? So, you know, this is all still happening, and now things are a little bit calming down. And what happens next? Well, I go to Canada's Wonderland with my son at age 13 with three of his friends. And at 9:55 p.m. on June 21st, 2003, myself and two boys, which I pointed out, witness a cigar-shaped object. It was yellow and green at the back and at the front underneath, rotating the lights, and it skipped across the sky like a tick. I'm telling you, we saw it probably maximum 5 seconds, and this thing must have covered 7-10 miles.
Wow.
Okay? It was incredible. It was like looking at the futuristic shuttle, okay? And the one kid looked at me, and he said, we just saw a blimp, right? I said, no, I believe we just saw a UFO. And he says, I'm getting afraid. And the other kid says, oh, I'm getting excited. And it's like, wow. So my son comes off the ride with his girlfriend, and I said, did you see anything in the sky? He goes, no. Come on, Dad, let's go. So we hit the road, and we find around Downsview, we see a very large black object on the other side of the road hanging there with a single red light rotating. It was huge. You can't even tell the shape it was, but whatever it was big. All the kids could see it. The girl was getting kind of freaked out about it. We were going on the 401, 120, back east to go home to Oshawa because it was probably near a 70-kilometer drive, maybe 75-kilometer drive from the north, and then to go due east. And when we were coming into the town of Ajax, the girl went, did you see that? And my son said, yeah. And I asked both of them, well, what is it you just saw? And they said they saw a woman in white in the middle of the highway with her arms out.
Huh.
Okay, I didn't see anything like that. I get home, and, of course, later on, my wife, you know, is upset. You know, putting these things in their minds and that and blah, 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 blah. And I said, no, honestly, these things were seen, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, that all calms down. And, well, what happens next is I want to know what the hell's going on now, because, you know what, if you have 9 sightings for all them years from 1967 to 2002, and now you're into a year now where it's different, where it's no longer August, the new month is March, okay, and that not only that, it's a daylight sighting and a night sighting, 2 sightings in 1 year, you go, what's going on with that? You return back to the place where you have a close encounter in 77, to find out maybe if there's an answer there for you where this prevalent sighting first took place that you get might get something. And I went there after work on July 18, 2003, and I went right to the spot where I stood where I saw that craft in 77, and I did a 360 looking at the sky for probably 5 minutes until I saw to the west of me a flat silver-shaped object. It was like, you could swear it was like a metal sheet moving across the sky. And I could see almost like, I guess it would be a bird. It looked like a bird, but was it a bird sailing around the thing, moving around this thing? And I'm watching it with my naked eye going, my God, what is it? And I fall to my knees and I go, what's going on? Okay, because
well,
now.
What do you think, Paul, because, I mean, either you're living in this major hot spot or they're somehow connected to you in some way. Cause,
well,
don't you think?
This is what you start to wonder. What's this all about? you know, this is no coincidence here. Okay,
right.
Obviously something is allowing me to see something here, or maybe I'm looking for it. Maybe I'm more attuned to the sky because, you know, how many people look up in the day? Really? I mean, we look down, we look, you know, straight ahead. We don't look up. You know, unless we hear some noise or something like a plane or a helicopter. But I guess because I was looking for something, I found something. I mean, this could be in coincidence too. I don't know, but obviously there is something in the area. Maybe there's something in the area that's attracting you know, these things. There, I must say, there are major hydro lines nearby all here, but you know, you question what's going on. So what happens next is I go to camp, and at camp, back to the sandbanks, you know, and this is around August 6th or 7th at 1 o'clock a.m. I decide to go for a shower. Okay. And it's nighttime, and camp is dead at 1 o'clock. So here's my opportunity. I'm going to have a shower. And I'm outside before going into having a cigarette, and there's a single light on the pole, and suddenly this creature, 3 feet long, okay, I swear to God, the best way to describe it is like a flying snake, okay? It had a propeller of wings behind it. The body of this thing, okay, first of all, it's like taking a broom handle stick, cutting it 3 feet, making it a little thicker. As for the body, it was grayish white. It had 2 eyes the size of a goose at the front of it, okay? And also the thing did a figure eight, and it was gone. It had the gyration of a fan. It was 6-7 feet away from me. I know what I saw.
So this was in the air?
It's in the air. It's flying.
And it looks biological?
It looks biological. Of course, it's got eyes. I know. I screamed when I saw it.
I can imagine.
I just leaned against the picnic table, puffing on my smoke, thinking, what the hell is it I just saw? And like within probably 20 seconds, it came back, but more into the night away from the light. And I saw it come in again, did a figure eight, and it was gone. And I just threw the cigarette down and ran into the shower stall and pumped in the quarters and going for the shower to calm down, you know, wondering what is it I just saw. And it, like I say again, the only way I can explain to you is what I saw in description. It had like a wheel or like a fan of feathers going or something going behind it, and you could hear a gyration like a fan. And when the thing even passed me, you could see the eyes kind of roll back, you know, like when you go past a dog behind it,
right.
How the eyes sort of roll back. That's what it did. I was just like, wondering, you know, what's going on here. And you're in a state now. Like, now here you are. Like, put yourself, have a little empathy here in my shoes here. What is it that's going on? And
well, there's some weird connection here between the UFOs and this paranormal stuff, that's for sure.
So I get back home, think more of it, and now we're approaching a time when I go, you know, Victor, what telling me abduction, the data I've read that sounds like, you know, it sort of fits, but I can't believe it. I can't go with this. You know, something's going on, though. And I figured the only way to know is I need confirmation. I need confirmation to know if I was taken in the 60s. How am I going to know? Well, I figure I'm going to go to the library after work in Scarborough, and I'm going to see if there's any records of any sightings in the 60s in Scarborough. And I got into Cedar Brae Library after work, and I was there for about an hour, and I came across an article in the Toronto Star Archives, and I found an article dated August 21st, 1965, a story about a man named George Bierman, a professional electronics engineer, and his wife in the Rexdale backyard on August 15th had witnessed a silver craft for several seconds and then just totally vanish. And it goes into the body of the story that it said, there were over 150 sightings last year, and many recent over Scarborough in recent weeks. And something went up my back. I was in total shock. I felt like, talk about shock the monkey, okay? It was like, oh, my God. And I looked around. It was like, you know, it just, you don't know whether to yell, scream, but, you know, stay orderly. You don't want to start a spectacle. And I printed the thing, and I walked outside Preston, and I looked up in the sky on this nice, sunny, bright day on August 13, 2003, and I felt like I was being watched. Okay?
Wow.
And I got a sense that I've been watched all my life. Okay.
I've heard that before. I've heard.
And I went home, made some calls, told some people, didn't tell my parents yet, and it's like, you know, nobody's believing this, okay? Because they're not experienced where you've experienced. I mean, I guess if you've never come across this, people are going to like, you know, like, what's he talking about? You know, kind of thing. And what happened was I went to work, and I took that article and I pinned it against my bulletin in front of my workstation, and I spoke to a couple people, and I just said it, not going into detail. I said, I was taken when I was a child, you know, like sounding like a lunatic. And it's like I'm like electrified. I'm stunned. I'm beyond fascination now. I'm stunned. I'm like, really, I'm in shock. And I feel so, like, wow, I notice suddenly the power goes out. And it's 4:11 on August 14th. And it's like people start running out of the building. And I'm going, what's going on? And I got a radio with a battery, and I'm, like, trying to listen what's going on. And then I hear the outage isn't local. It's across the Eastern Seaboard. And I'm like, whoa, okay, time to leave. And I left. And I went to my parents, and I told them I was taken as a child. My mother was very upset. You were not taken as a child. Now, I got to tell you a thing about my parents. My mother is from England, from Liverpool, where the Beatles are from. My grandfather was a Mason. His father was a master Mason. My grandfather served even Paul McCartney's father as meat. So, you know, it was a tight community. But apart from going to England and seeing stuff in England and being with my relatives and even going to the roots of the Isle of Man, if you've ever heard of that, that's where the Bee Gees are from.
Mm-hmm.
The thing with that is, I've lost my train of thought. I'm crossing here, but the point of it is that my mother was not going to believe it, okay? And my father, being Greek, from Northern Greek of Florina, I asked him, I said, did you ever experience any paranormal stuff or anything? And he said, well, there was a fella in town who said he talked to a snake. I found that very interesting. And I said, well, what did the snake say, or what did he say to the snake? He says, I forget. He never told me. And I thought, that's weird. But my parents weren't going with this, okay? And it's like it was very frustrating for me now. You know, you're going to your parents with something here. That,
well, is it possible that they've had experiences but are not really willing to accept it or share it?
Well, I don't see any indication, though. My mother just seemed very angry about it, very angry. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so, you know, you sort of leave it with your parents, but as this goes on, you leave and I go home to Oshawa, because you got to remember we have an outage now happening, and you know you can't use the gas for gas stations, and I got enough gas to go home, and I get to my family, and you know, 24 hours later, Toronto comes back on, or no, Toronto came back on. We went out at 4:11, so Toronto came back on at 5 in the morning. But in Oshawa and other surrounding areas, the power wasn't on, so I didn't go into work on Friday. And that's another thing, too. When the outage had actually happened, I was hearing news there was a fire in Niagara Falls generation station from a storm. We found out later there was no storm that happened in Niagara Falls, let alone a fire. Also, they tried to say it was at another substation that had happened. I found that very interesting because I was listening to the news. Because, you know, you start seeing sightings, Preston, you get a little more attentive to your surroundings of what's going on around you.
Right. Well, that's
like,
what I'm
like, it's like an animal instinct like a wolf. You know, the instincts of animals, the traits they have, very vast. But it's becoming amplifying from the various sightings you have. That's the way you feel within. So what happened past this in August 16th, I went to Cobourg. It's a beach off Lake Ontario, a 45-minute drive east of where I am in Oshawa. I took my youngest son and his friend, and we went to the beach, and around 2 o'clock, he wants to go get French fries. I said, go ahead. You know where the money is in my bag, and I could watch him. It's a couple of hundred yards away for French fries, and I noticed some dragonflies, Odonata by class order. In entomology, they're called, and they were the green, bigger ones. And I just started thinking in my mind, lots of dragonflies. And, you know, it's just uncanny. I thought of lots of dragonflies when I saw a couple of them. And I'm getting out of the water, and I towel off and sit down and light up a smoke, and within 5 minutes, there's a wave of dragonflies, hundreds of thousands of them coming over from Lake Ontario, same color. I grabbed my binoculars. I looked to the east, I looked to the west, I looked up, I don't know, a quarter mile each way, dragonflies, nothing but dragonflies coming. People screaming on the beach, I even hear a girl saying, is this a sign? I looked to the east, and I could see three white objects in a triangle formation, very far away, straining my eyes with binoculars to see what it is. And I'm looking for about less than a minute, and I put them down, and I just see seagulls, and I put them back up, and whatever I saw was gone. I then thought, my God, something paranormal happened here. I was psychic about something. I would imagine this is a natural occurrence. I really don't know. I've never seen anything like this in my life, but it was the timing of my thoughts, what had happened, and synchronicity, like, was I psychic to it? And following Monday, I went back to work. Again, we had an outage in our place of work. It was like a brownout, you would call it. And I went outside, and looking to the west, I could see an object, silver, changing shape and flashing like a reflection off, like, you know, when light hits a mirror, and changing shape. And it was very low, and it was moving across from the south to the north over Victoria Park. This would be probably a mile and a half away from me, maybe two max.
Wow.
And I watched it, and I was like, wow, something's going on. And I was getting kind of flipped out of, you know,
You know, Paul, we're approaching the end of our hour here. We still have a couple more minutes, but I want to give you a chance to, you know, wrap up your story.
Okay.
We are running out of time.
Certainly. There's a lot to tell. I wish I could get past 2003, but basically where it went from there is that I had some very prevalent sightings. I started talking to psychics. I was told St. Michael is guarding me, protecting me.
Mm-hmm.
I've been told by psychics I could feel high energy coming from you. I went through groups to sniff out what it was going on. And one fellow said to me what was starting to catch on was, you're sensitive, you're attracting the UFOs, like, there's some people who track ghosts, and of course now, you know, that's a $64 million question, but why me? And so now you're on this gant of searching yourself and, of course, the subject of the interrelationship and how it all comes to be. And what it comes to be now, in my eyes, is that there's like an awakening of your surroundings, and the awakening is you start to question not about the ETs, not about the UFOs, you question who's controlling your world.
Wow.
And now, alongside the study of extraterrestrials and such, you start to look at the geopolitics of our world, history, ancient history, of how it's all been going, and finalizing in your mind that our world for centuries has been barbaric and a system of murdering each other. And you start to question why. Why is this going on? Why do we lie to each other? Because we're conditioned to. This is how they rule. This is how they keep us separated. This is how they subdivide each and every one of us. And what I've learned out of all this, it's like an onion. The core of the family's control, and they own each layer insulated to keep themselves paid off, so compartmentalized that now the truth of it is, the matter of fact, they want to build up the military complex, and they don't want you to have contact with our cosmic cousins from the outside. Simple as that.
I think you're right on it. I think you're right. I'm right there with you.
I find it tight. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry about that, whatever that was. But I've come more so of wanting to stand forward because I dare to care to share of what I have found, and there's more to tell.
I'm going to have you back on the show because we're pretty much out of time.
I'm sorry about that, but I guess that's the first part. And I would appreciate you having me back on because I will go forward and continue on if you have the time.
Yeah, definitely. I think your story is very fascinating, and I'd love to give you some time to finish it. But
one thing to note too, Preston. I haven't got a website, but I've been sharing with everyone, and as far as I see it, it's all free. It's not for money, because when you take away the K from the monkey, that's how they control the monkey. It's the money. And the real true specialist is when you take the E and the Y away, it's the monk. The monk sees within and the monk sees without. Are you with me on that?
I love what you're saying, absolutely.
Because it's like nuclear, eh? It's switching the letters around. It's unclear why we use it.
Well, Paul, I want to thank you so much for coming onto the show. It's been fascinating, and I'm definitely going to want to hear some more. I'll have to reschedule
for
another.
Thanks for having me. I'll keep you updated with the photos as they come in.
Okay, awesome, yeah. I'll have to have you back on. I'll schedule another episode for you upcoming so we can hear the rest of your story because it's amazing.
Well, I think the citizens of the world should know. Let's not keep them dumb. Let's not keep them dumber or the dumbest. Let's get them wise.
Exactly. Well, thanks, Paul.
Okay, take care, man.
You too.
Bye.
Well, everyone, that's our show for tonight. I hope you've enjoyed it. You've been listening to UFOs and the Paranormal Over Our Heads on BDS Radio. I'm your host, Preston Dennett, and our guest tonight has been Paul Sheesheese. And he's been talking about his amazing UFO experiences in Canada. And we're definitely going to have him back on again because we didn't get to finish his story. But I hope you can join us next week when I have another exciting guest. Until then, have a wonderful evening and a great week. Bye now.
Can you still talk, Preston?
We have to wait to go off the air first.